Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Okay, today I've got my sometimes co-host, John Galloway, who, as you may know, is a technical evangelist on the Windows ASP.NET Azure team. And along with John, we've got two guests today, Ian Gilman and Jim Jackson, the co-authors of HTML5 for .NET Developers, forthcoming from Manning Press. Ian claims to be a digital renaissance man. He's worked as a programmer, a designer, even a filmmaker for such diverse companies as Mozilla, Meta Creations, and Microsoft in order to prove it. He's passionate about web technologies, lively user interfaces, and feedback loops of all shapes and sizes. He believes the prize in life goes to the one who makes the most toys, although sometimes he'll tell you it's all just daydream debris, it says here. Jim Jackson is an author and developer for Applied Information Sciences in Columbia, Maryland. He's been developing software on the Microsoft platform for nearly 20 years. In his spare time, he rides mountain bikes, shoots competitively, remind me to be polite, and spends time with his wife and children. Jim's most recent project is an archive magazine viewer that works in all major browsers, including iOS on the iPad, using HTML5, CSS3, JavaScript, and an ASP.NET MVC3 server solution deployed to Azure-hosted services, making John happy, SQL Azure, and Azure Blob Storage. Did I get all that right, gentlemen?
How did you do that without taking a breath?
I'm originally from New York. I slowed it down. How are you?
Doing great.
Great. Well, I'm really glad to have you here. We scheduled this a couple times and for various reasons had to put it off. But what that did was give me the time to at least take a look at your book, HTML5 for .NET Developers, which looks terrific. And speaking as a XAML C# Windows 8 developer, I'm very, very interested in the topic of your book. What drew you to that subject?
Well, for my part, this is Jim. For my part, I came from a very heavy server-side background, and being dropped into this rich client project, it became very obvious that I was going to have to learn all these black belt JavaScript skills, and it took a while. So since I was talking with Manning anyway about the possibility of writing a book, it came up that, you know, this was the area I was working in right now, and that I had recently made that transition. So it seemed like a really good platform to write from the perspective of someone who is already a professional developer and needs to move into this new paradigm.
Right. And so I was working with Jim, and I'm the HTML5 guy. I don't really know that much about .NET. So Jim helped me learn about .NET, and I helped him learn about HTML5. And in a way, this book is sort of the result of that.
And when you're describing HTML5, is it for any particular platform? Is it for a particular type of development? Or is it more generally HTML5 itself?
The format of the book is generally, after the first couple of chapters where we discuss an overview and semantics, we'll go through and start with a basic server-side MVC platform and then add to that the implementation of, you know, a specific or a couple of specific JavaScript APIs and say, this is how you build this. This is some really good basic JavaScript that will make all this happen in a very terse manner. And then if you want to go a step further, this is how you can integrate this with the server side, wherever appropriate.
Right. And we're covering a number of the prominent HTML5 features, but we're doing it in a way that's fairly agnostic to whether you would be deploying it, on a normal desktop browser or something like an iPad or inside Windows 8.
Okay, so for a potential Windows 8 programmer, your book would still be relevant.
Yeah, even more so, in fact, since the modern version of Internet Explorer 10 and the desktop version of Internet Explorer 10 are the most HTML5 compliant browsers that Microsoft has released so far. So the work that you do here with a web app will be even more compatible once you get to the Windows 8 platform. And then in addition, the JavaScript and HTML5 skills do transition fairly well into the Windows 8 development platform.
Okay, so then help me understand, because I've looked at HTML5 a little bit, and I've looked at some books on HTML5, and what I saw seemed to imply that it was less a coherent specification than a series of different technologies. And you're clearly very passionate about HTML5. Has it evolved past what I've seen? What am I missing, and why is it so cool?
I think that it's continuing to evolve, that the APIs are getting more and more stable. They're adding new APIs. I think most recently the Media Capture API has changed status and is now much more stable and more useful across multiple browsers. So it's always changing, or it's continuing to evolve, continuing to stabilize, and more features are being added to it. So as those features are added, the various browser vendors will start to implement them, and they'll, you know, you'll get that feedback loop of, this doesn't really work the way that we want it to, and this could be better, this can be dropped. And so things change as you go. What we tried to do with the book is stick to as many of the APIs as possible that are completely stable, so that the book has some leverage to stay on the bookshelves for a longer period of time, where people can use it for as a reference book for a longer time.
So as you're building out, I mean, you've got you've got different platforms, you've got different browsers, and as you've said, that, you know, things kind of evolve and change over time. Even standards, there can be a standard that's supported differently or only supported a little bit in different browsers and then added more. So do you cover in the book how you work for that, so that you target lowest common denominator and add on, or do the graceful degrade, or how do you manage that?
So there are several strategies you can use. We cover some of them. We use Modernizer, which is a library that allows you to detect which sorts of features are available on the particular browser you're using. And then another popular technique is to use what's called a polyfill, which is basically just a little library that will only kick in on a browser that doesn't have the feature that you are expecting, and it'll fill in with some version of that feature, enough so that the feature can limp along sometimes, and sometimes it can be completely undetectable to the user. They'll expect that it's just built into the browser. So while HTML5 is continuing to evolve, one of the things that's a really good tool in your tool belt is these things like jQuery and Modernizer and various polyfills that will basically create for you a unified and consistent programming experience across all the browsers.
Now, you mentioned jQuery, and earlier you were talking about APIs, and all of that sounds like JavaScript. And how much of a distinction do you draw between HTML5 and JavaScript?
Well, HTML5 APIs, HTML5 really comes in two facets. The first is the semantic web, so the actual tags that you're dealing with. Div is no longer necessarily a div. It can be a section or an article. So the tag that surrounds your content actually means something, so you don't have to try to figure out how to add meaning to that for something like a search engine. And there's a fair amount of material out there on that. We cover it in detail in Chapter 2 and then go and use it wherever necessary, wherever it seems appropriate throughout the rest of the book. The rest is all the JavaScript APIs. So when we say HTML5 APIs, what we're saying is the HTML5 JavaScript APIs. You can't get to them without a code implementation.
And a number of those APIs are like the audio tag or the video tag or the canvas tag. These are things that you can use without any JavaScript, but they really shine when you also apply JavaScript to them. So there's a little bit of HTML and then probably a lot of JavaScript.
And does your book teach the necessary JavaScript, or does it assume that I already know the JavaScript I need?
No, it absolutely does not assume that. The thing that I hear most from a lot of the developers that I deal with on a regular basis is, you know, I think I might have missed the boat on this whole HTML5 JavaScript thing. That everybody's talking about stuff that's so far beyond what I know. I've been doing server-side ASP.NET for, you know, the last 10 years. You know, it's too late for me to change because all this stuff has moved on. It's really not true. And so what we try to do is, in a non-condescending manner, just show you as the reader, okay, this piece of JavaScript does this piece of JavaScript does this, and this is how it all works together. And so we basically just walk through, you know, how the functional bits of JavaScript work. There is a pretty in-depth appendix at the back, But even without reading that, you can get a lot from just the structure of the code as we're going through it.
And we assume you already know .NET, so you know we can basically build on your existing programming knowledge to help you get the foundation in JavaScript that you're going to need to take advantage of these new technologies.
Okay, but when you say you assume that I know .NET, do you mean specifically ASP.NET, or do you mean .NET in the broader sense?
I'm going to say that we assume you know C Sharp, but I think that we have done some to accommodate the VB folks as well.
Okay, so the key walking in knowledge or the key audience is a C Sharp .NET developer who wants to understand HTML5 and JavaScript.
Right, and even further than that, what we've found is, and what I found when I was originally the sole author on the book, was that the code that I was writing in JavaScript looked an awful lot like the code that I was writing in C Sharp. And when Ian came on the project, I was just amazed at how little code he could use to accomplish the same things that I was accomplishing with the exact same language. And so what we do in the book, and most of the JavaScript was turned over to Ian, almost all of it, and he was able to go through and make things very, very concise, very readable, and very reliable. And I think that is one of the major benefits of the book, beyond just the HTML5 APIs, is this ability that Ian has of making the code convey exactly the intent of the programmer, making it very readable, very fast, and easy to remember. And so that's the kind of thing where generally a .NET developer will come at this with a C# or a VB.NET perspective. And you have to sort of get over that hump and say, you know, don't try to make this be something else. This is JavaScript. Embrace that. These are some really good ways of using JavaScript. There are lots of flavors of it, but these are some really good ways to do it. Go forth and conquer.
Yeah, it reminds me of when C++ was beginning and a lot of C programmers were coming over to C++, and our first C++ program would be a giant class with a huge C program inside of it. And sort of, you know, you adapt it to what you already know. And right. So I understand what you mean about using JavaScript as JavaScript. Ian, were you able to accomplish that terseness with pure JavaScript, or did you use jQuery in the book as well?
We do use jQuery. And in my experience as a freelance developer, there are very few projects out there that don't use jQuery. So we felt that that was also an important foundation to give people.
Sounds like a book for me. What about you, John? Wake John up.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I was paused. Yeah, no, that sounds great. And you know, I very much I hear that over and over, especially on JavaScript. It looks close. The syntax looks close enough to C#. I made so many mistakes as I was getting used to JavaScript, and I hear over and over. And I've seen some talks and horror stories where people will say, oh, I can't believe JavaScript is so messed up. It does this and this. And it's because of exactly that, trying to make it something it's not. It's, I had somebody who knew JavaScript pretty well tell me, you know, really this is Lisp in, you know, Java syntax, but it's definitely not, you know, it's not C#. For good. I mean, there's a lot of good that comes out of that too.
Right. There's some great idioms that once you learn them, you can use them everywhere.
Right.
So is that the big mental shift from C# to JavaScript, or are there other mental jumps that I need to make?
I think that's the biggest one. The ability to do things asynchronously is pretty common now, and is much easier in JavaScript from what I have personally found. What's the most interesting to me is that once
I got to interrupt you there. You're saying JavaScript is easier for asynchronous? Have you looked at the new C# await keyword?
Yes, absolutely.
And even so.
And the WinJS promise, you know, that corresponds to it. I guess what I'm trying to say is that the normal callback mechanism that you can use in JavaScript, because you can pass everything as a function, so you can pass anything around to anything else and then just execute it. That's not something that you get in a strongly typed language. So it's not specific to JavaScript, but coming into an untyped language from C#, it's a pretty big paradigm shift.
Okay, that makes sense. We should make a mental footnote to come back and talk about TypeScript at some point. But I want to stay for the moment on this transition from .NET to HTML5. So we talked a little bit about the mental transition. What else as a .NET developer am I going to be facing?
So one of the things that I really enjoy about JavaScript is the ability to get a tremendous amount of work done with very little code. And so you reach this point where as you're programming, you have written far, far less code than you expected to, and everything works perfectly. And you're sitting around, you're giggling at your computer the way that you did when you first started programming, because you've gotten so much done with so little effort, and everything seems to be, you know, perfect. So that's one of the major transitions that I feel like people are going to encounter, which is good.
Okay, so that's a cool feature of JavaScript, clearly. What's a really cool feature of HTML5?
The ability of your browser to interact with the base machine. So you can interact with the camera, with the GPS, with the browser's history, with media content, audio and video. There's so much more that you can do from inside a browser, and there's no deployment. You just add the page, you know, someone navigates to your page, and they have the application.
I've been making a ton of use lately of the local storage API. Whenever I do a lot of, you know, little demos or prototypes for clients. And so when I'm throwing something together, it's wonderful to be able to just have whatever my state is get saved out to the browser, and then I can load it back up next time you come to that page. And that makes me able to prototype out a fairly complicated system that normally you'd need to build out a server for in very little time.
And you can actually write to the user's file system?
Well, in that particular case, what I'm doing is I'm writing to a little cache that's inside the browser. I'm not actually writing out to the file system. There are some more experimental APIs that allow you to access the file system, but as you can imagine, there's a lot of security that goes around that stuff.
Yes.
So when you're discussing this, are you talking about making the transition from, okay, you were a .NET developer and now you're going to be an HTML5 developer, or are you helping me to take advantage of HTML5 in an existing ASP.NET application? Because, for instance, I'll talk to people that have legacy ASP.NET web forms apps that it's, and I've dealt with this too. It can be pretty difficult to really take advantage of, you know, clean semantic HTML when you're not generating that HTML. And there's a lot that's been added in web forms over the years to help with that. But I'm wondering if you touch on that in the book as well.
We focus primarily on MVC. And there's an appendix that is pretty basic on what MVC is, or ASP.NET MVC rather, what it is and generally how it works. We don't go a lot into the traditional ASP.NET applications, the web forms applications. And that's primarily to keep the amount of content down, because it seemed like if we went in that direction, we would have to write every single thing twice. And that gets sort of redundant in a book format. People don't necessarily, once they know how to do the basic stuff, then they can add more to it. I also found that in trying to build web forms applications with HTML5, that there were a lot of little idiosyncrasies that just seemed like they cluttered up the content. There are a number of people out there that have done a lot of work and a lot of blog posts and so forth on integrating these APIs with traditional ASP.NET stuff. The couple that come to mind are Joe Stagner. I think he's with Mozilla now. John Papa, who does a bunch of work with Pluralsight. These guys have done a lot of published work around specifically how ASP.NET can integrate with HTML5. What we found is that the MVC side of things was so much simpler, so much more straightforward, that it was almost worth a double transition from a web forms application to move into MVC and into an HTML5 environment. But, you know, obviously that's a per project decision that has to be made.
Yeah, note to John that clearly we need to have John Papa and and Joe back on the show to talk about what they're doing. It's been a while. Okay, that I have to say, this is the longest conversation I've had about JavaScript in the past couple months without the term Node.js coming up. Does that play a role in your book at all?
So I think that the main thrust of the book is the idea of using HTML5 within a .NET application. But for one of the chapters, we did use Node.js on the server side. And the reason for that is we were working with the WebSockets API. And unfortunately, at the time of writing the book, there was no good WebSockets server-side solution in the .NET stack. I think I understand that that's being worked on, but we figured we might as well have a little bit of a Node server-side element just for the variety as well.
I'm sure after that we're going to hear from Glenn Block with all the Node.js stuff that he's been doing. But what we looked into were various implementations from Microsoft for, I think, interoperability bridges had one, and there were a number of other sort of small projects. SignalR also has a WebSockets implementation, but what we found was that they were either no longer supported. The team that I talked to at Microsoft would say, you know, I really wouldn't put this particular content into a book just yet. Or the implementation like SignalR was so involved and had so many layers of polyfills that getting to the actual WebSockets content, the actual implementation of the base API, would involve, okay, install all this stuff, and then from line 6 to line 3500, remove all that code because we don't need it.
Right. I think with SignalR, that's kind of their goal, is that you don't think about it. Like you drop in SignalR, and if WebSockets there, great. Otherwise, it'll drop. It drops all the way down to stuff that works in IE6, maybe earlier. So.
Right, long polling and all that.
Yeah.
So that really sort of distracted from the actual API. And using Node.js, I think that our server side, after we did the include for the external WebSockets library, or the TCP library, I think our server side is less than 200 lines of code for a chat server. So really terse, and again, back to, you know, how well you can write JavaScript, you get a lot of functionality with a very, very little code.
All right, before we stop, I did want to ask you what you see coming down the pipe for HTML5 development. What's on the horizon?
More APIs. Ian mentioned the file API. The media capture API is coming, or is stabilizing. I think that's going to be a really big deal for social applications. I think things that are already there are going to get more stable. They're going to get faster. I'd like to see a little bit more research and development done around the offline access, and possibly for more applications to come out that implement offline, because it's just not something that people really expect, but it's a great capability.
That would certainly be an extraordinary challenge to how people think about HTML5 applications, is for it to be significantly offline. You begin to blur the distinction between a web application and a desktop application.
Yes.
Indeed, and I think that Windows 8 is doing some interesting stuff in that area, using HTML and JavaScript in their more or less native apps. Another place where this is going on is in the Firefox OS project, where they're working on making a phone, basically, that's built more or less entirely in the browser. And so this is just for their project, but they're adding all sorts of things like telephony APIs. And those things may eventually make it out to the wider browser space as well.